A Course in Miracles, The Omaha Connection. What is A Course in Miracles? The course is the result of the collaboration between two Columbia University psychologists, Dr. William T. Thetford and his colleague, Dr. Helen Schuckman. Bill was head of the pre-doctoral program in clinical psychology at Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons, and also associate professor of medical psychology. He hired Helen in 1958 as his research assistant. After 7 years, they had been able to bring some organization to the department, but were both still experiencing a tremendous amount of turmoil, and one day Dr. Thetford exclaimed, "There has got to be a better way of doing this." To his surprise, Helen said, "You are absolutely right, Bill, and I will help you to find it." Psychic experiences. Shortly after this occurrence, and throughout the summer of 1965, Helen had a series of psychic experiences. She was able to relate to Bill some of the things that he was experiencing on his vacation while she was still in New York. She also intuitively became aware of a friend of Bill's who was contemplating suicide. Bill called him, discovered that he was indeed deciding on that fate, and was able to talk him out of it. She also had a series of dream sequences, one of which was where she discovered a buried treasure box. When she opened it, there was a manuscript in a black binder with the name Aesculapius on the cover. When she later looked it up, it meant the Greek god of healing. Helen wrote letters to Bill describing her experiences, and in one letter she wrote, "I have the idea. I am obeying an order. And these orders are rather stern. The main feeling I get is that I wouldn't dare disobey them. This is the second one." In the fall of 1965, Helen called Bill, saying that the voice refuses to go away. It keeps saying, "This is A Course in Miracles. Please take notes." She asked Bill, "What should I do? Suppose it's crazy. Suppose it doesn't make any sense." Bill said, "Well, let's take it down. And if it's gibberish, then no one needs to know." When Helen brought in what she had written the first night and read it to Bill, they were both startled. This is what Helen's shorthand notebooks look like. On the left, about three paragraphs down, in parentheses, you'll see where it says, "This is A Course in Miracles. Please take notes." Helen would take these notes and bring them into the office, and Bill would type them up. And this is what it looked like, the typescript that Bill typed up. Later, they would go over the material once again and take out all the personal information. And this is what that final manuscript looked like. And so Helen agreed to begin taking the dictation, although she said if it makes any grammatical errors, if it goofs in any way, it's had it, and I will refuse to continue. She would take the dictation in her own customized shorthand in the evenings and would come into the office the next day to read the material to Bill. Bill would often jokingly say that, although he was Helen's boss, he had become her secretary, typing up her notes. He was a fast typist, but soon noticed he was making strange Freudian-type errors. For example, he once typed salvation as slavation. He spelled crucifixion as crucifriction, and typing you and your brother as you and your bother. Bill was also co-editor of the Journal of Abnormal Psychology at this time, and thought it was ironic that he was constantly turning down manuscripts because they were, quote-unquote, unscientific. What was this voice? Helen often exclaimed, "The voice made no sound, but seemed to be giving me a kind of rapid inner dictation, which could be interrupted at any time, and later picked up again. I never knew when I started a sentence how it would end, and the ideas came so quickly I had trouble keeping up with them." She often disagreed with the content and many times resisted the process. In addition, All of her efforts to lose the material were somehow thwarted. She would accidentally leave the shorthand notebook in a taxi, and it would be returned in New York City. Or a colleague would return a notebook after finding it among report papers. Sometimes she would throw the notebook away and go to bed, but she could not sleep. She would inevitably get up and retrieve the notebook and continue with the dictation. Shookman did not claim to be the author of the material herself, and at one point she wondered, where did the writing come from? I did not understand the calm but impressive authority with which the voice dictated. It is largely because of the strangely compelling nature of this authority that I have referred to the voice with a capital V. At several points in the writing, the voice itself speaks in no uncertain terms. Jesus. My own reactions to these references, which literally stunned me at the time, have decreased in intensity and are now at a level of wonder and acceptance. Helen was born Jewish, however, both her parents were non-practicing Jews. She had a Catholic nanny and a Baptist cook, although she later had become disillusioned with God and by this time was a militant atheist. And so, with Dr. Thetford's moral and sometimes physical support in transcribing her shorthand notes, Dr. Shookman took down 1,500 typewritten pages of A Course in Miracles over a period of 7 years, from 1965 to 1972. As the material developed, a great deal of it became increasingly beautiful. Hundreds of pages are in iambic pentameter. They began to feel as though they were being given words and music at the same time.
Listen, 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 listen. Perhaps you catch a hint of an ancient state, not quite forgotten. Dim, perhaps, and yet not altogether unfamiliar. Like a song whose name is long forgotten, and the circumstances in which you heard completely unremembered. Not the whole song has stayed with you, but just a little wisp of melody, attached not to a person or a place or anything particular, but you remember from just this little part how lovely was the song, how wonderful the setting where you heard it, and how you loved those who were there and listened with you. The notes are nothing. Yet you have kept them with you, not for themselves, but as a soft reminder of what would make you weep if you remembered how dear it was to you. You could remember, yet you are afraid, believing you would lose the world you learned since then. And yet, you know that nothing in the world you learned is half so dear as this. Listen. And see if you remember an ancient song you knew so long ago and held more dear than any melody you taught yourself to cherish since.
One day, about halfway through the text, Helen entered the office and was extremely distraught. She told Bill, "This time it's gone off the deep end. It's gibberish. It makes absolutely no sense, no meaning, nothing to it. It's absolutely impossible. I refuse to read it to you." Bill calmed her down, and she finally agreed to read the material to him. Here is the very end of that section. "Forgive us our illusions, Father, and help us to accept our true relationship with you, in which there are no illusions, and where none can ever enter. Our holiness is yours. What can there be in us that needs forgiveness when yours is perfect? The sleep of forgetfulness is only the unwillingness to remember your forgiveness and your love. Let us not wander into temptation, for the temptation of the Son of God is not your will. And let us receive only what you have given, and accept but this into the minds which you created and which you love. Amen. Bill recalls, at that point, Helen burst into tears. The beauty of the language, the profundity of the thought, and the equivalence of the Lord's Prayer for the Course seemed to be so clear. The first part of the material lasted 3 years, 622-page volume. When asked how she would know when it was completed, the voice told her that she would hear the word Amen. After about 9 months, Helen became restless and one day began to take down the workbook for students, which took another 2.5 years, 365 lessons. A few months later, the third volume was announced as The Manual for Teachers. Bill and Helen realized that there was a large amount of personal material included in what had been transcribed. They asked and received information regarding what editing changes needed to be made in the retyping. The final retyping and editing was completed in September 1972. Helen and Bill were given specific instructions by Jesus for the editing of the Course. A close study of these instructions reveals two kinds of changes he told them to make. Number one, remove material intended for you, Helen and Bill alone. Jesus said to Helen, "This is a private point just for you. It is not part of the Course." Also, he placed Bill in charge of what should be included in the written part of the Course, implying that there were gray areas that required a judgment call. In another place, Jesus said, "Nothing that relates to a specific relationship belongs in the notes." One time, Jesus told Helen that she was taking much more personal than usual notes, and that these did not have the more generalizable quality which this Course is aimed at, meaning generalizable to others. At another time, she wrote down a very personal experience, but in this case, he said, what you wrote can be useful to miracle workers other than yourself. So the principle was very simple. If what you write is so personal that it cannot benefit others, take it out. And two, correct scribal errors. He gave correction, God should be read Christ. The Father and the Son are not identical, but you can say, like Father, like Son. In May 1973, Ken Wapnick, a clinical psychologist, was introduced to the Course for the first time by Helen and Bill. He soon realized this would be his life's work. The manuscript he was shown was one that had been retyped several times by Helen and Bill, in which the personal and specific references were removed. They had presented the same manuscript to Hugh Lynn Casey, son of Edgar Casey and head of the Association for Research and Enlightenment, the ARE. Ken recalls, "Some of the titles I felt were not appropriate to this section. The capitalization, to show emphasis using a typewriter, was inconsistent. The paragraphing was inconsistent. The punctuation was inconsistent." Helen and Ken began in the fall of 1973 to edit the entire manuscript line by line, word by word. It took about 1 year. Bill was not involved in this editing at all. In October 1975, there was application for copyright made by the president of the Foundation for Inner Peace, Judy Scutch. She had intended to register the copyright with Jesus as the author. When informed that a copyright could not legally be granted to a non-physical author, then the Foundation for Inner Peace did not list the name of Jesus, but instead listed anonymous Helen Schuckman. December 1975, copyright is granted. And in June 1976, the first edition, Abridgment, is printed. February 1981, Helen Schuckman passes away from pancreatic cancer in New York City at the age of 72. And in 1985, the second edition is published. In 1992, the Foundation for Inner Peace, the current copyright holders and publishers, along with the sister organization, Foundation for A Course in Miracles, had the thought that the copyright on A Course in Miracles was being infringed on, and they started making changes on what could be quoted. In 1993, A Course in Miracles and ACIM were registered as trademarks by the Foundation for Inner Peace. Subsequently, a CompuServe forum was closed down for a short period and reopened under another name due to trademark infringement. At this time, Marianne Williamson was asked to pay royalties, and Robert Perry of the Circle of Atonement was denied permission to publish his book on the Course. Over the next several years, there were the beginnings of a pushback by the Course community. Eventually, in 1996, a spiritual community called Endeavor Academy was sued by the Foundation for Inner Peace for copyright infringement. During the discovery phase of the litigation against Endeavor Academy, an earlier manuscript of the Course was discovered in the library of the Association for Research and Enlightenment, the ARE. This was the copy given to Hewlin Casey, son of the sleeping prophet Edgar Casey, by Helen Schuckman and Bill Thetford, once they had finished retyping the original manuscript several times, removing the personal material, and before it was heavily edited by Helen and Ken Wapnick. Bill and Helen wanted to know if the ARE might publish it. Hewlin declined to publish it, but wished them success in their endeavors. He said the material was very much in line with what his father brought through. This copy is now referred to as the Hewlin Casey version, or HLC. It was subsequently transcribed into electronic form and placed on the internet by anonymous parties. When the HLC manuscript was discovered in 1999, it was essentially equivalent to the finding of the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Course community was previously told for 24 years that only minor changes in punctuation and title headings had been made during the editing project in 1975. They had no idea until this discovery that 25% of the first five chapters were removed. Most of all the capitalized words were changed to lowercase and replaced with italicized in only a few cases. 53 miracle principles were changed to 50. Sections were rearranged and major portions were deleted. 127 references to soul were changed to 12. The word soul was either deleted or changed to another word, such as creations, you, or spirit. Realizing the beauty of this material and wanting to get it out into the world, Tom Whitmore, a Creighton graduate and practicing lawyer in Omaha, along with a few other devoted Course in Miracles students, formed a nonprofit organization, Course in Miracles Society, and published the manuscript under the name Jesus' Course in Miracles in 2000. They were soon after presented with a restraining order and were sued as well. Tom shares in Michael Bronstein's Heartland Healing article, quote, "That it was channeled was the thrust of Endeavor's defense in the beginning," Whitmore said. "They thought that was a pretty good argument. I don't want to claim credit for putting the winning argument in their hands, because I think they had it before. I do suppose I would claim that I had influence on them focusing more energy on that prior publication issue than they had previously." When they had the summary judgment hearing in 2002, the judge threw out all claims other than the premature publication claim and left that one issue for trial. Establishing that there were previously distributed copies of ACIM floating around long before the 1975 version was a crucial part of the Endeavor Academy's defense. Regia Joy Green from Omaha, and a member of the Course in Miracles Society, was traveling to visit her sister in Arizona. She stopped at a friend's house, Lee Flynn, a fellow Course student who lived in Santa Fe. During that visit, she felt an inner compulsion to mention to Lee that Sims was looking for proof of pre-copyright distribution in order to win the court case and overturn the copyright. Lee recalled that he had recorded a Judy Scotch presentation about The Course of Miracles back in the middle 1970s. In that presentation, Scotch had talked about all the enthusiastic copying and distribution of the course prior to the time of printing. Lee thought he had a copy of that tape. He went looking and found it. It was sent to the judge and was the pivotal piece of evidence that decided the outcome. It was found that the contents of the Foundation for Inner Peace first edition, published from 1975 through 1992, had been placed in the public domain via the distribution of multiple Xerox copies. Since a document that is in the public domain cannot be copyrighted, the current copyright was canceled. However, copyright in all of the changes introduced in the second edition remains intact, as does the copyright for the text preface and the two supplementary pamphlets, Psychotherapy and Song of Prayer, as well as Schucksmann's poetry, The Gifts of God. This means that the Urtext, HLC, Special Messages, Helen's unpublished works, and all prior renditions of the work were deemed to be included in its copyright, which was now overturned by this judge. Jesus' Course in Miracles, which was placed in storage for several years, was now free to be published. A few years later, in 2006, a new soft and hardcover edition were published. A bit later, a pocket-sized edition was published, along with a large print edition and electronic editions for e-readers. The Korean translation of A Course in Miracles' original edition has been completed, with the German just about finished, as well as the Dutch. Currently, the Spanish and Russian translations are in process, and there are negotiations and some commitments for Japanese and Chinese translations as well. Thank you. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of the Omaha connection to A Course in Miracles. Please visit us at jcim.net. And at the bottom of our homepage, you'll see links to our blog. You'll also see a link to our Facebook pages. There are links to our Twitter account as well, and also to the bi-monthly e-magazine. We have a link to our store, Cafe Commerce, and also a link where you can join our mailing list, where we mail out the daily lesson and text reading every day.